I'm Cristiano Giuffrida, and today I'm going to talk about how to enhance operating system security using efficient and fine-grained address-based randomization. This is work with Anton Kausten and Andy Tannenbaum at the Vrije Universiteit in Amsterdam. So essentially, the primary goal of our work is to protect the operating system against, again, kernel-level exploitation, which is an attack vector increasingly gaining momentum in these days, as you also heard from the previous presentation. In particular, we had seen many kernel-level exploits surfacing for all the major operating systems. I can mention Windows, Linux, BSD, macOS X, and even embedded operating systems like iOS. There are many reasons for this growing phenomenon. I'm going to mention a few here. First, the attacker has plenty of memory vulnerabilities to choose from inside the operating system. As we all know, given the size and the complexity of modern operating systems, with new bugs and vulnerabilities constantly being introduced, second, there are a plethora of internet-connected users running the very same potentially exploitable kernel version, opening up opportunities for large-scale attacks. And finally, the operating system in general offers many attack opportunities for both local and remote exploitation techniques. So if we look at existing countermeasures for kernel-level exploitation, we observe a number of solutions focusing on preserving kernel code integrity or focusing on kernel hook protection or generally aiming at control flow integrity, So now, the common denominator with all these solutions is the extremely focused threat model, which essentially is not able to provide a comprehensive protection mechanism against arbitrary memory error exploits. In addition, most of these solutions require virtualization support and or generally incur high overhead. For all these reasons, to address all these issues in our work, we decided to pursue a different direction. And in particular, we're interested in exploring the benefits of having address-based randomization, or ASR from now on, directly inside the operating system. So ASR, as you all know, I'm sure, is a well-established defense mechanism against arbitrary memory error exploits. It's been long studied at the application level, and there are many application-level ASR solutions proposed in the research community. In addition, all the major operating systems include some kind of address-based randomization support at the application level. The operating system itself, unfortunately, is typically not randomized at all. There are a few exceptions. For example, recent Windows releases at least perform basic text randomization. This strategy, however, is insufficient to counter arbitrary memory error exploits. In contrast, our goal is to implement truly fine-grained address-based randomization for operating systems. So this goal entails several challenges, given the many differences between application-level ASR and OS-level ASR. One first difference that we examine here has to do with instrumentation. Essentially, if we look at existing application-level ASR solutions, they all assume we can heavily instrument an application binary. This strategy has two important consequences, poor reliability and high overhead. Both of these consequences, while potentially acceptable at the application level, becomes serious concerns inside the operating system. Another difference has to do with the re-randomization model. Existing application-level solutions all assume a stateless re-randomization model where we can just shut down the application, restart the application from scratch, and enforce essentially a different memory address space layout. Now, this strategy, again, has two consequences, loss of critical application state and disruption of service. Again, while potentially acceptable at the application level, these are serious concerns inside the operating system. Another difference has to do with informational leakage. So a typical attack to ASR, where the attacker is able to retrieve critical information about the memory address space layout and mount a successful attack completely bypassing ASR. Existing application-level solutions often dismiss information leakage attacks as unlikely at the application level. Unfortunately, the situation is completely different inside the operating system, where we have many possible information leakage channels. So just think about the standard proc file system interfaces, for example. And in addition, a recent study on the Linux kernel has actually found information leakage to be the most common bug in kernel development. Another difference has to do with brute forcing, another typical attack to ASR. The typical strategy at the application level would involve an attacker exploiting the crash recovery capabilities of some long-running server application and essentially repeating the attack by guessing different memory addresses until successful, all the while trusting that the server application will be able to recover from intermediate failures, essentially. The very same strategy wouldn't work inside the operating system where even a single crash will essentially trigger a kernel panic and prompt the attention of a system administrator. To deal with all these issues and the challenges in the new context, we are proposing a new design for OS-level ASR. Unlike existing application-level solutions, we want to make sure that we make both the location but also the layout of all the memory objects unpredictable to better deal with information leakage attacks. Unlike existing application-level solutions, we want to rely solely on link time transformations implemented in this case with the LLVM compiler framework. This strategy exposes a minimal amount of untrusted instrumentation code to the runtime, resulting in a more efficient and safer ASR implementation. In particular, most of our transformations are actually statically verified by LLVM at link time. In addition, our design is complemented with a live re-randomization strategy. The idea is to periodically re-randomize the memory address space layout of the operating system on the fly while it's running without any loss of state. And this is done to maximize the unobservability of the system, even in face of information leakage. Our live re-randomization strategy is also used in conjunction with our link time transformations to make sure we induce no changes in the typical software distribution model used in these days. Essentially, we want to make sure that we can ship the very same copy of the operating system to all the users, and then we can use our live re-randomization technique to lazily re-randomize the memory address space layout while the system, the operating system is running. We have implemented our ASR strategies in a microkernel-based operating system architecture where all the major operating system components are running as user space event-driven processes. This includes, for example, drivers or even process management, for example. The current prototype is a major rewrite of the Minix 3 operating system, exposing a POSIX interface to user applications. There are many benefits to using this architecture to experiment our ASR techniques. First, thanks to the modular design, we can perform selective re-randomization, that is, re-randomize dynamically one piece of the operating system at a time without impacting the rest of the operating system. Second, the event-driven nature of our operating system components allows the re-randomization process to start only in well-known execution points where we can essentially simplify state management at re-randomization time. And finally, the process-based isolation used in the core components allows us to automatically detect and recover from any runtime errors at live re-randomization time. Our techniques can also be ported to other operating system architectures and can even be used to improve existing application-level solutions for user applications. I mentioned that the primary goal of our ASR transformations is to make all the memory objects and their layout, their location and their layout unpredictable. Let's see how this strategy actually works in practice for code randomization first. So what you see on this slide is an example of a simple function compiled from C code to LLVM assembly, which is where our transformations actually happen. So this is a very simple function with a single basic block, printing a string, doing some other stuff, and simply returning a value. Our transformations will first randomize the function location by making the address of the function unpredictable. They would then prepend the function with another dummy function to introduce random size padding and increase the randomization entropy. And finally, they will randomize the internal layout of the function. This is done by injecting a dummy basic block at the very beginning of the function and by pushing all the other basic blocks of the function down. The dummy basic block has a random number of instructions and is never actually executed at runtime, not to impact performance. Its only goal, essentially, is to make the location of all the other instructions and basic blocks inside the function unpredictable. This strategy is used to effectively hamper return-oriented programming attacks, even if the attacker happens to find out the original address of the function, because the location of all the other gadgets internal to the function is still unpredictable. A similar strategy is used for static data randomization. Again, we see an example of a variable compiled from C code to LLVM assembly. The variable has a struct type with 5 fields in this case. Again, our transformations would first randomize the variable location, making its absolute address unpredictable to the attacker. They would then prepend the variable with another dummy variable to introduce random size padding and increase the randomization entropy. And finally, when possible, they would operate internal layout randomization for the variable. This is done by operating transformations at the type level. So in this case, we'll permute all the struct fields and inject interfield padding. And of course, the transformation has to be operated consistently across all the memory objects of the same type. Again, this strategy is critical to deal with information leakage and to minimize the assumptions acquired by an attacker in case of any information leakage. As for stack randomization, the objective of our transformations is to make the location and the layout of all the stack frames completely unpredictable to the attacker. Unlike existing solutions, our stack randomization strategy is completely static, resulting in more efficient and safer ASR implementation here. Essentially, while using a static strategy to give the illusion of true unpredictability, we use two levels of padding, essentially, both interframe and intraframe stack padding, and the padding is completely generated statically at link time. This strategy gives the illusion of true unpredictability for all the stack objects across different function invocations. As for the layout randomization for the stack frames, we permute all the local variables inside individual stack frames, and we also separate buffer variables from non-buffer variables to guarantee additional protection against buffer overflows. As for dynamic data randomization, our transformations provide support for malloc and mmap-like allocator abstractions, both implemented as first-class abstractions inside our operating system processes. Similar to existing application-level solutions, we can fully randomize all the memory mapped regions across all the legitimate regions of the address space. And we also interleave all the heap allocations with random size padding. However, unlike existing solutions, we can also operate full heap randomization and enforce this at library randomization time, when we essentially reconstruct the heap from the ground up. In addition, we can also operate internal layout randomization for all the dynamically allocated memory objects. As I mentioned, our design is complemented with the first stateful library randomization technique. This is particularly critical inside operating systems where we cannot afford the loss of critical state. The idea is to continuously generate operating system process variants in the background by using our ASR transformations and periodically deploy them online to re-randomize the memory address space layout while the system is running. Our strategy is based on wall process state migration. Essentially, we want to migrate the entire execution state from one OS process variant running in its own address space to a new OS process variant of the same component running in its own new address space. With this strategy, we can support arbitrary memory layout changes at re-randomization time, and we can also support all the standard C idioms with minimal manual effort. In addition, our goal is to sandbox the re-randomization code to automatically detect and recover from runtime errors. The strategy is to let the randomization code run completely isolated in the new process variant. And if we detect an error, we can simply roll back the entire process and resume execution in the old process variant without consequences for the reliability of the operating system. To support live re-randomization, we rely on another link time transformation implemented with the LLVM compiler framework. Essentially, we take the original OS component and we statically instrument the component by transparently linking a state migration library, which migrates the state from one variant to another at live re-randomization time. And we also inject metadata information into the final binary to describe the entire component state. The metadata information is used at runtime to locate and introspect all the memory objects part of the address space. The metadata information is also write protected and randomized itself to avoid giving rise to new opportunities for attack. To effectively locate and introspect all the memory objects part of the address space, our instrumentation needs to generate metadata information about all the static and dynamic memory objects. We start by generating metadata information on all the types present in the original code. Essentially, this is necessary to correctly introspect the data of all the memory objects at runtime in a precise manner, and also to support internal layout re-randomization. To locate the memory objects, we also need to generate relocation information, and we start doing this for global variables and static variables. Note that we don't need to do the same because it will actually impact performance for local variables. This is assumed that the re-randomization process can only start at a well-known execution point where we assume that no significant state is captured on the stack of the individual process. But we do need to generate metadata information for string constants and functions. You can imagine that these guys play an important role in pointer migration, where we essentially need to reinitialize all the pointer values in the new address space to reflect all the changes in the memory address space layout. We also need to dynamically create and destroy metadata information to describe all the dynamically allocated memory objects. We do this by instrumenting all the allocation and deallocation functions and by assigning a type to every allocation site in the original code. So let's now take a look at the resulting re-randomization process. What you see here on the slide is the currently running OS process variant of an OS component on the left side of the slide. And on the right side of the slide, you see the new process variant of the same component, potentially with a completely different memory layout. You also see the randomization manager. This is a component part of our OS architecture, which essentially coordinates the entire process. In this case, the re-randomization manager, when a policy decides that it's time to start a re-randomization process for this particular component, we'll load the new process variant in memory and will notify the current variant that it's time to start the re-randomization process. The current variant will eventually reach a synchronization point and block. At this point, the randomization manager will ask the new process variant to initialize in phase of a re-randomization event. This will prompt the state migration library to start executing and take over the execution, while the randomization manager traces its execution to detect runtime errors and eventually roll back the entire process. In the first step, the migration library performs what we call metadata migration. Essentially, we copy over all the metadata information from the old process variant to the new process variant in the local address space. And at the end of this step, we have the old metadata information describing the old address space and the new metadata information describing the new address space available locally. At this point, this information is used by the library to perform the second step, the actual state migration step. In this step, the library uses the metadata information to locate all the memory objects part of the old address space, introspect their data, and copy their data over to the memory object's counterpart in the new address space. At the end of this step, essentially, we have the new state completely initialized, reflecting all the changes in the memory layout for the new process variant. At this point, control flow logically moves from the old synchronization point in the old process variant to the new synchronization point counterpart in the new variant. At this point, the randomization manager can safely clean up the old process variant and just allow the new process variant to resume execution. The entire process, of course, is completely transparent to the rest of the operating system and also to user applications. So let's now take a look at the performance of our techniques. In this particular experiment, we are interested in evaluating the runtime overhead of our instrumentation techniques. To do this, we have instrumented both the operating system and all the user space applications running on top with our ASR transformations and library randomization transformations. In particular, we did this with two sets of benchmarks, the SPEC CPU suite and our own system call intensive benchmark, which we call DevTools. As you can see, for most of the benchmarks, on average, the overhead is pretty low, typically less than 5%. There's an exception, the spike that you see on the slide here, 36% overhead. This is per bench. It's a memory-intensive benchmark part of SPEC, which is pinpointing here a potential source of overhead introduced by our transformation, which comes essentially from the necessity to instrument all the allocation and deallocation operations. However, we expect the source of overhead to be much lower in regular applications. In this particular experiment, on the other hand, we are evaluating the impact of our library randomization strategy on the system. To do this, we run our two benchmarks again, while continuously re-randomizing all the operating system components one at a time in a round-robin fashion in the background. What you see on the x-axis is the re-randomization latency, essentially the time interval between two re-randomization events. As expected, as we decrease the re-randomization latency, the runtime overhead on the completion of the two benchmarks increases exponentially. Luckily, for reasonable re-randomization latency, for example, around 10 seconds, the overhead is still bearable, typically around 5%. So to conclude, I presented a new fine-grained ASR technique for operating systems, which can in turn also be used to improve existing application-level solutions for user applications. I tried to show you how we can achieve better performance and security than prior ASR solutions. In particular, unlike existing solutions, our design includes a live stateful re-randomization technique and internal layout randomization to better deal with information leakage attacks. Like existing solutions, we expose no heavyweight instrumentation to the runtime, resulting in a more efficient and safer ASR implementation. And finally, as for the reliability angle, we can rely on a process-based isolation implemented in our operating system architecture to automatically detect and recover runtime errors at live-driven randomization time. This concludes my presentation. Thank you for your attention. I'll take questions.
Rick Farrow. So obviously the performance overhead increases, like you said, exponentially. So, and you said, oh, it would be fine if we're doing re-randomization at a 10-second interval.
Right.
Did you actually test this against any particular kernel exploits to see how often you would actually have to do this re-randomization if you were, you know, if there was an attack that was using a leak that was going to point to a particular address for a return into procedure type of attack against the kernel?
No, I haven't actually tested this against real exploits, and this actually makes a good point. So essentially tuning the re-randomization latency for particular components is not easy in the general case. You have to assume essentially a threat model and put yourself in a particular scenario. This is like tuning a timeout, you know, in the general case for different workloads for whatever system you're using. So one possible scenario that we envision where this is gonna be, you know, easier is actually using our system as a live workaround system for unpatched vulnerabilities. So say, you know, there's a vulnerability in one particular operating system component, but there's no patch available yet for this particular vulnerability. At that point, you know exactly where you stand, right? So you know exactly what the vulnerability is about, and you can tune these accordingly, and maybe you give up on performance a bit. So again, increases exponentially, but if you want to protect an untrusted component or an unpatched component, you can give up on performance and actually increase this. And okay. Again, it depends on the particular vulnerability, and it depends also on the number of probing runs that the attacker has to do, right? Is mm-hmm. You have a window, if you start probing essentially and you retrieve some information about the memory layout, but you need something else, if essentially all your probing runs don't fit in one re-randomization window, it's, you know, all the information is lost.
Right, that's really the key. But that's a good answer. Thank you.
Hi, Destin Miller, Microsoft. I was just wondering if you've looked at whether, with your randomization manager, whether there's a possibility that your V1 process gets wedged, I guess, so that it cannot successfully migrate to the V2 process, and thus you basically lose the benefit of re-randomization. Does that make sense? Like if some property of its memory layout or its current state could be manipulated by the attacker, maybe you no longer have re-randomization, and then it's just the good old days of learning about the ASLR and attacking it.
So I'm not sure I understood the question. So
let me see if I can rephrase it. Can you demonstrate or prove that you always can re-randomize, or is there a possibility that your V1 process is in such a state it will never successfully re-randomize in the future?
Okay, for example, are you assuming a corrupted state? Let's say memory.
It doesn't necessarily have to be, but yeah, sure. Assume the attacker did something.
Obviously, there are many situations. So what we try to do during the re-randomization process is make sure that the entire process is isolated in the new process variant, right? So if you can start the re-randomization process, the old process variant is not affected, right? So you use kernel-mediated inter-process communication to make sure that the old process variant is isolated. You know, you just read from the address space, nobody can touch its address space, right? And you roll back if there is a problem. But clearly, so this, you know, the requirement is there is you need to be able to start the re-randomization process. So say there is a bug in the old operating system component, and you get stuck in an infinite loop, for example, right? At that point, even if there is a re-randomization event, for example, the component will never reach the synchronization point in that case. So there are situations where, yes, you reach a tainted state, and you can you cannot even start the re-randomization process. Or the other situation is you have a corrupted state, but you know, as far as you're concerned, it's not even noticeable. But as a side effect of the re-randomization process, you actually make it worse, right? You see, you're parsing the state, essentially, and you're reconstructing the state, you're reconstructing all the pointers. As a side effect of this operation, if you start from a tainted state, you can end up in a worse situation in some cases. Yes, that can happen.
All right, thanks.
Hello, Michael Franz from the University of California, Irvine. So when you migrate or when you re-randomize a operating system component, that basically has to be an atomic operation while you're migrating. So
right.
How much is that going to become a bottleneck, in particular when you're, for example, running on a multi-core? At some point, you would have to synchronize everything on that migration, and you couldn't use that operating system component. So how realistic is that to actually do that on a larger scale?
Well, actually, for example, what we're trying to do in our operating system architecture is to have essentially different, for each operating system component, you actually have different replicas running at the time, and you sort of push the state of intermediate requests to the client, so to the client component for scalability reasons. So there's ongoing work in our team already doing this. So in that sense, the availability becomes less of a problem, because even if you re-randomize one process variant, there's another operating system component being able to serve requests. In a way, you still affect all the clients, right? But you minimize essentially the unavailability of this particular component by multiplexing different requests on different replicas. The other thing is that this operation is short-lived, so the results that I'm showing in our evaluation are actually pretty pessimistic, because we haven't operated extensive optimizations. So for example, I can tell you that one of the bottlenecks in our current prototype is actually our dynamic points to analysis. We don't do anything magic. It's linear scanning of all the memory objects to do essentially bound checking. There you could use indexes and lookup tables to speed that up. So I suspect that in practice, the re-randomization time, if you really want to optimize this, can be brought down quite consistently. And I suspect you're not going to have huge availability problems. Of course, an exception is for operating system components that carry a lot of state. So we have done some experiments, but we haven't experimented with gigs of state in that case. In that case, of course, clearly the re-randomization time increases linearly with the number of objects that you have. But we haven't carried out these large-scale experiments yet. But it's definitely a good suggestion.
Do you have any mechanism to time out and abort?
Yeah.
Migration.
Yeah. So the advantage of this design, right, is that you can basically roll back the re-randomization process at any point in time, because the old process variant is completely blocked. So you're free to do whatever you want. At some point, you say, I can't tolerate more than 2 seconds. Okay, just roll back the entire process and resume execution in the old variant. So yeah, this is a good point. It can be used also for availability. You can give You can sort of bound the re-randomization time, not just for reliability.
Okay, thank you, Ray.
Hi, Ivelik C. Perez, RNC. Besides the potential performance issues, don't you have a problem with exhausting entropy pools if you have a lot of new addresses to compute and randomize?
Yeah, so you have to be careful with that, essentially. So our transformations essentially work with any possible source of a randomization. So what we typically do by default is seed link time pseudo random generator from slash dev random or slash dev random. But you have to be careful. Clearly, when you configure this, you're going to have to configure all the policies on the system to make sure that you don't exhaust existing pools, depending on the workload that you're running on the system. So, but we can configure this essentially depending on the particular scenario that you want to deploy these on. There's clearly a trade-off between the amount of randomization that you can achieve for other space randomization and pool exhaustion for other applications, essentially.
Okay, thank you.
There are no more questions. Let's thank the speaker.